You are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM, and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC. Welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device you are listening on right now likely wasn't free, the radio waves you're listening to are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat, mug, or a t-shirt, and all the proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or, if you like any of the programming on WXRW, reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. Now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All right, let's dive into it. In today's episode, we're looking at what is widely considered to be the opposite of freedom. That is the political system known as fascism. We could go into this in depth over many episodes, and we may have to, but for now, we'll just take a quick look at what fascism is, where it came from, and why the modern world is facing the threat of a very real fascist revival. Let me state very plainly for the record, fascism is bad. That's reductive and potentially overly simplistic, but it's the plain truth. Some people argue that truth is subjective and that there are no objective truths, to which I would say shut up and fall down a flight of stairs. I believe as much as anyone else in shades of gray, but the Anti is about freedom, and fascism is inherently against any and all tenets championing freedoms. So, what on earth is fascism? You hear people throwing the word around a lot, in a lot of different contexts, and if you're not familiar with the real ins and outs of it, then it can become pretty meaningless. Fundamentally, it is radically authoritarian and hierarchical. It collects all power in the hands of the state, which is purposefully undemocratic. Democratic thought and procedures are the enemy of any fascist ideology. Power is consolidated in what is typically a one-party state, ruled, at least historically, by a dictatorial demagogue. A demagogue being somebody who leads by rhetoric and attacking what might be considered a shared enemy. Famous examples are Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, and Francisco Franco. And with a cast of characters like that, you would wonder, and understandably so, how on earth are we experiencing an upswing in fascist sentiment and ideology across the globe? And we'll get to that. So, fascism is, by definition, extremely patriarchal, misogynist, nationalist, racist, and totalitarian. Totalitarianism posits that for any state to survive, all of its members must be the same. They must adhere exactly to the same ambitions, life goals, desires, and mantras. essentially they all must be marching in the same direction in lockstep. If any part or piece of the system, aka a human being, is seen as being other or not working within the gears of the machine, then fascism also embraces violent direct action to simply remove the malfunctioning cog. Direct action is an important topic in this series. It takes many different forms. In a fascist system, direct action amounts to the state's right, and fascists would argue duty, to kill any person or persons it deems unnecessary, unhelpful, or unpleasant. Now, personally, I find that to be gruesome and terrifying, and I sure hope you do too. That's a really important factor to take into account when thinking about or discussing fascism. It is inherently, unapologetically obsessed with war and violence. Fascists across history always applaud and worship, really, some sort of idealized warrior figure, be it the ancient Roman soldier or the Viking marauder or the Pictish, whatever. Fascism is focused on conflict because the structure of the system is essentially designed like an army, with the political leader generally also being the supreme military leader, which segues nicely into the economic policy of any fascist state. It would be easy to kind of examine a fascism from the exterior and conclude that it was a capitalism just like any free market capitalism. And it displays, at least outwardly, a lot of the same kind of tropes and symptoms of any free market capitalism. It uses money, it rewards trade, people sell their wages for labor in jobs, with bosses during a work week, there are banks, etc., etc. However, fascists refer to their specific form of capitalism as what they call a third position. And that's really just a dumb way of saying unfree market capitalism. Let me take just a really brief second to state unequivocally, the anti is anti-capitalist. So as it stands, modern classically liberalist free market capitalism creates a hierarchy and conflict between the capitalist class and the working class. Policies are enacted to benefit the capitalist class to the detriment and enslavement of the working class, while maintaining the status quo through the police force and the judicial system. A fascist third positionist capitalism would never allow the hierarchy to be dictated by markets. That is too democratic, which is fundamentally hilarious to me. So no, instead, a fascist regime dictates, and you know, I use that term really literally because they're all dictatorships, but a fascist regime dictates the hierarchy like any army might be regimented. Your place in a society will be dictated for you by your superior and theirs by their superior, and so forth. Your agency or personal will, free will, is subdued entirely by the state. And again, that's all very much on purpose. That's not just like a negative externality that you might find with the capitalist mode of production. That is very purposeful. Your agency and personal free will is subdued entirely by the state. So that means your role in society is completely prescribed by the state, including your income, your access to goods and services, essentially what you can and cannot do with every moment of every day of your life, and also whether or not you get to live, that kind of thing. Essentially, society is stratified, like the layers of Earth's geology, with the dictator on the top and everyone else beneath, in a kind of like a layer cake of misery and death. And that stratification is all based on your allegiance to and social place within the party. And the party is the state, and vice versa. They are inseparable. The best modern example of this that at least I can think of and have done any real amount of research into is the system employed currently in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or more commonly referred to as North Korea. Their particular brand of fascism, created by their original leader, Kim Il-sung, is called Juche. And I'm probably saying that wrong, but it roughly translates to English as self-reliance. And it's really just, it's a form of autarky that strictly segments society based on faith in and to duty to the single party that rules the country. Autarky just means any system that is explicitly closed. It's a closed economy with as little information exchange with the outside world as possible. And again, North Korea is a really good example of that. They were referred to as the hermit nation for a really long time because they were so closed. They're a perfect example of an autarky. So most fascist regimes are very autarkic by their design because they require complete homogeneity in their populace or among their populace. So the fascist third position is, it's basically just capitalism, but with less freedom. Just like, come on. I mean, how are you going to get less free than capitalism? Well, fascism. Yeah, that's how. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WXRW River West Radio. This is The Anti, a primer on freedom. And I'm your host, NTSC, and today we're talking about fascism. Why it's really, really bad, and also some possible causes for its resurgence on the world stage. So we already mentioned that fascism relies very heavily on conflict. That conflict comes from within the system as much from without, at least according to traditional fascist doctrine. Really, really a fascist regime posits that there must be an eternal, perpetual struggle so long as any dissidents exist against the party, or so long as different races exist in the case of white nationalism, or in the case of a theocratic fascism, so long as different religions exist, or so long as communism exists, because, man, let me tell you, communism is like the cobra to fascism's ferret. They hate each other. Communism and fascism are like, I don't even know. Who hates each other in like comic books? I won't even make an attempt at a metaphor here, but suffice it to say, communism and fascism are not good friends. And I'll put in a little aside here and mention that there are plenty of historic examples of systems that claim to be communist and are in all exterior forms just straight up fascisms. No joke. The external conflict that fascism relies on is the maintenance of a political enemy. And I really do mean maintenance. Fascists have been quoted as saying things like Eternal War will keep the people sharp, or, you know, or something like that. Really terrifying things like that. The internal conflict is the necessary surveillance state and governmental systems of control implemented to suppress any possible disagreement with the state. This is really hard for a lot of modern citizens of, you know, mostly non-fascist countries to understand, because we're used to our political and class violence being structurally obfuscated. The violence enacted against you in the capitalist mode is really subtle sometimes. It's the violence of the workplace, the violence of healthcare, the violence even of the tyranny imposed on you by your own morals and the folkways in which you were raised. The police, more and more as they've been militarized, are becoming much closer to the kind of politically violent force seen and witnessed in a true fascist regime. And really the outrage people express against police violence is the only thing keeping fascism at bay, because political violence in a fascist system is totally accepted. It's just understood as, you know, part and parcel to creating a homogeneous society. So a civilian being shot and killed by police today might draw crowds of demonstrators against the police, whereas in a purely fascist society, no such outcry would occur. You know, I mean, like, you know, the odds are good most people would know the murder took place, but they would not have seen it unless it would have been to the political advantage of the party to make the execution public. And I know this is, like, you know, really grisly stuff, but that's what fascism fundamentally is. Fascism is military and state violence made manifest. Structural violence is an important topic on this show, and the inherent structural violence that affects everyone's lives. But fascism takes it to, like, a whole new level. Structural violence in a fascism is the secret execution of anyone who poses or might seemingly pose a threat to the party.
Fascism, in order to be successful as a political movement, must have a mass basis. It must secure not only the frightened submission, but the active cooperation of the great majority of the people. Since by its very nature it favors the few at the expense of the many, it cannot possibly demonstrate that it will so improve the situation of most people that their real interests will be served. It must therefore make its major appeal not to rational self-interest, but to emotional needs, often to the most primitive and irrational wishes and fears. If it be argued that fascist propaganda fools people into believing that their lot will be improved, then the question arises, why are they so easily fooled? Because it may be supposed of their personality structure, because of long-established patterns of hopes and aspirations, fears and anxieties that dispose them to certain beliefs and make them resistant to others. The task of fascist propaganda, in other words, is rendered easier to the degree that anti-democratic potentials already exist in the great mass of people. It may be granted that in Germany, economic conflicts and dislocations within the society were such that for this reason alone, The triumph of fascism was sooner or later inevitable. But the Nazi leaders did not act as if they believed this to be so. Instead, they acted as if it were necessary at every moment to take into account the psychology of the people, to activate every ounce of their anti-democratic potential, to compromise with them, to stamp out the slightest spark of rebellion. It seems apparent that any attempt to appraise the chances of a fascist triumph in America must reckon with the potential existing in the character of the people. Here lies not only the susceptibility of anti-democratic propaganda, but the most dependable sources of resistance to it. The present thinkers believe that it is up to the people to decide whether or not this country goes fascist. It is assumed that knowledge of the nature and extent of anti-democratic potentials will indicate programs for democratic action. These programs should not be limited to devices for manipulating people in such a way that they will behave more democratically, but they should be devoted to increasing the kind of self-awareness and self-determination that makes any kind of manipulation impossible.
The voice of Theodor Adorno, a German essayist and sociologist and philosopher, a leading mind in critical theory, and also an anti-fascist. So why or how is fascism enjoying a resurgence in the modern era? I mean, of course, you know, I don't have any definitive answer, and take everything I say with as many grains of salt as you want, but I've got my own speculations like everyone else has. We know that any fascist leader needs to be a demagogue, right? Someone who's very good and practiced at appealing to people's emotions and not their reason. A demagogue is quick to recognize a hot button issue about which people are really angry and, you know, often justifiably so. And that demagogue is going to find a scapegoat for them, something or someone against whom they can direct all that anger. And the fact is, of course, it's not that scapegoat's fault, and it never was. The real source of the misery and the suffering of the people is the system in which they live and the structural violence they face on a daily basis. But that doesn't help the fascist gain power. What helps a fascist gain power is being keenly able to recognize or create a false difference between groups of people, blacks and whites, Jews and Gentiles, or, you know, Christians and Muslims, etc. So the fascist finds that difference and fans the flames of hatred between them, pointing a finger and accusing the group to which they don't belong as being evil or degenerate or amoral or lazy, you know, a leech on the good, hard work of, you know, the people, the good people, etc. And all that rhetoric gives a population an easy way out. They no longer need to take responsibility for themselves, nor do they really need to undergo the very real and necessary task of reimagining what their world could be, because that takes time and effort. First, you need to have the wherewithal to recognize the state of affairs in which you struggle, to step back and see the forest for the trees, and pay heed to the grievances of your neighbors, and to see how we're all struggling. Then once you can see plainly the problem for what it really is, you need to take personal responsibility for fixing it. That's a really hard thing to do when you're so beaten down and ground thin by the system in which you're working. So, it's a lot easier to look up to, you know, someone who is a militaristic, patriarchal demagogue who is giving you an easy out by telling you it's so-and-so's fault. And if we just got rid of them, then all we would have left is good people willing to work together to make the world a better place. And it's all, of course, you know, it's a bag of lies and it's manure. So what will it take to stop fascism? Well, that's the really tough question, because it takes all that difficult work previously stated and more. Any state, be it fascist or socialist or capitalist or anything that has a built-in hierarchical power structure, is going to be sympathetic to fascist tendencies and fascist groups and fascist ideology and fascism in general, because fascists, by their very nature and doctrine, worship the rule of law and the state. Why on earth would the state, therefore, want to defeat fascism? It's not in its best interest to do so. Really, the state's job is essentially to be a fascism, but to maintain the illusion that it isn't one, so that the people can't recognize the trap that they're in. So, to defeat fascism truly, you need to first see it where it is, and then organize against it. The recent spate of fascist demonstrations and gatherings around the world, along with the election of fascists to positions of power globally, has drawn attention to groups like Antifa, Redneck Revolt, and other vocal anti-fascist organizations who stand in opposition. Anti-fascist groups are generally nonpartisan, inclusionary groups with the sole and shared purpose of meeting fascists face-to-face where they gather and making it known in no uncertain terms that they are not welcome. This is achieved through any number of means, but it's always noteworthy that the police arm of the state is quick to defend and protect the fascist side of the debate. Because again, that's literally what the state stands for, is generally fascist ideals. It's always going to be in the state's best interest to suppress views which are antithetical to its control over the populace. The views expressed on the Anti are not the official views of WXRW. It is my opinion that Antifa and other anti-fascist groups are essential in the fight against fascism and its inherent violence. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I am your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show and other awesome shows can, of course, be found at riverwestradio.com.